It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here on this bright and sunny Saturday morning where we're about to be buzzed by fast-moving airplanes. So anybody who likes that kind of thing, I assume this is the beach route today.
No, it's NAS.
Oh, it's the inland? Okay.
Yeah.
It's the inland route for the Angels today. So don't be surprised when your airplane noise is a little bit louder than usual, because these guys don't travel in a soundproof environment. In fact, sometimes I think they go a little faster than the sound itself. Anyway, that's always fun around here, being in the birthplace of that. And you know, the state is part of the history of all of that. And we admire the guys, and we take good care of them. There's a lot of them around here in our various locations. So good for them, good for us. You'll like the price. Don't really have to pay anything.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun. It's always a lot of fun.
Oh, it is. Yeah, we went to a number of them when it was on the beach. Haven't ever been out to the other one, but I like the fact that they vary it so the bigger percentage of the people in the area can get a real close-up look if they want to. So have some fun today with that. Meanwhile, for the next hour, we'll talk about things that matter to a lot of people, like money. First, I'd like to welcome everybody back, the regulars. You know, we count on you all the time. And if you're new to the show, having just found it or been told or stumbled on it, or you're driving out to the air show or whatever, then try to stick around for the hour, and you will be treated, we hope, to some things that are useful for you and everybody else. If you want to change the subject a little bit, all you got to do to talk about what you want to talk about is pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255, and we will always take you immediately and talk about what it is that's on your mind. So with that little bit of intro, we did it again. We're on a streak. Friday afternoons have been so excellent lately. And I like what that says. We've talked about this many times. When you go into a weekend with people buying, it's a really positive sign in the market, in our opinion. And we've been doing it over and over and over. So a couple new records yesterday.
Yeah, another week, another all-time high. It's getting a little boring. I'm not sure.
Bore me some more, please.
Yeah, I'll take it. Well, the performance is actually very similar to the first half of the year, but the market looks completely different. Yep. In the first half of the year, you saw NVIDIA and the other mega cap tech stocks. They were all pulling. They were pulling the indexes up. The market wasn't really up.
No, market was soft, actually.
It was. Yeah, it was pretty weak. Yeah, that's true. But because they have such an oversized weight in the indexes, it made everything look really good. But it wasn't really good. It just wasn't ideal. But that is not what is happening anymore. And the other problem with that is that if those stocks then reverse and the market doesn't turn around, you're going to be in for some trouble. Mm. You're looking at a correction, most likely, and a potential for another bear market. But that isn't what happened. Those stocks did turn down, but the market flipped and the market started going higher. So the rest of the stocks started going higher. In fact, earlier this week, we saw 20% of the companies in the S&P 500 hit a new all-time high on the same day, which that just rarely happens. In addition to that, there were no stocks in the S&P 500 that were at all-time lows at the same time. So
I hadn't caught up on that little one.
Yeah.
The trivia question that we'll introduce right after the first break has to do with that very thing.
Yeah, it doesn't happen often that these things, but the market does tend to outperform 6 months and a year later after those events. So that is great news for the next year or so. There's some other news that would be less optimistic for the next year, but nothing really bad. Everything is either moderate to really good. So that's what the trend lately has been, much more positive than it was in the first half of the year. And a lot of that is a result of the switch we saw in the market kind of right at the halfway mark of the year, when the seven mega cap tech stocks started to they weren't all down, but they just weren't performing like they were in the first half of the year. And the rest of the market really started to turn on.
Yeah. And I just got a little text and it says, if you know the time and place for the air show, someone would like to do it, just so you know, people are coming in. If we don't have all that right now, we'll introduce it right after the break.
I mean, I know it's today and tomorrow at NAS Tracks. I'll have to look up
the time. Yeah, we'll look it up when we get a couple minutes on the internet.
Yeah.
So hang on.
Our current bull market has now lasted 2 years. Bull markets that make it to 2 years generally last to more than 5 years. So that's another bit of good news. The bad news there is that the third year of a bull market, which we're about to enter, is not always the best year. In fact, it's like the worst year of a really good period. Now, there's still the historical average is still for gains, but very modest gains, like 2%. And so that doesn't mean that's what will happen in the next year, but it is a possibility. So far, this bull market has seen returns of 63.6%, which is great, but the average is 195.1% for all bull markets. So that would say that we have the potential to go quite a bit higher in the market. For the week, the Dow gained another 1%, while the S&P and NASDAQ were right behind that with returns of 0.9% and 0.8%. For the year, the S&P is now up 23%, the NASDAQ is up 23.2%, and the Dow trails by a bit at 14.8%. International stocks did not see as strong of a week. The index dropped 0.4%. A lot of that could be squarely dropped on the back of the Chinese market. It dropped 3.6%. After rocketing higher on news of government stimulus, the Chinese market has now fallen over 13% from its peak. Don't say we didn't warn you that that might happen, because we certainly did. Some other areas of the market did much better than that this week, including crypto assets, the financial sector, and marijuana stocks. On the other side, we saw performance of clean energy stocks and commodities decline this week, and in some cases take some pretty major hits. Earnings season is in full stride now, with over 100 stocks having reported. So far, 75% of stocks have beat on earnings and 62% have beat on revenue. More companies have been lowering guidance than raising it. So far, I would say the theme of the earnings season is that financials have been coming in much, much stronger than expected. Technology has been sort of a mixed bag, with Netflix having an outstanding quarter, while the semiconductor has seen some good and some bad. Taiwan Semiconductor beat on both earnings and revenue, while ASML missed their earnings and the stock dropped 14%, so a little bit of each. It's still really early in the season, and as things progress, this could definitely change, but the results so far are pretty strong. And this week we'll see results from companies like Microsoft, Google, Tesla, and Amazon. So those can really sway markets.
Could be a biggie.
Yep, it could see some volatility this week. And the VIX has been elevated too. So that means that there is that potential.
Okay, just got notified by my astute research department that the show is at NAS Jacks. Pretty much everybody around here knows where that is. Gates open at 9 and the show starts at 11. So the good news for all of you is you can listen to us first and not miss the show. How about that, everybody? Pretty good stuff. All right, we're going to pay a couple bills and come right back and wrap this up and get into all kinds of fun things. So don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have a trivia question, as usual, brought to you by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm. You can call Paul at 904-636-7888. Adam was talking about the length of the bull market and how these things tend to continue once they have their second birthday, which we had a week ago today. So the general rule, the average, he already gave you, but a little mathematical reminder right now, that average, it consists of adding up all the readings and dividing by the number of readings. Okay, that means one thing. There's another measure called the median, and the median simply means there were an equal number of readings higher than that as there were readings lower than that. So I want to know, in order to get to the median bull market that is over 2 years old, how far up would the S&P have to run in order to reach that goal? It doesn't have anything to do with the time it'll take or anything. It's just the median actual number. And it's pretty impressive, I'll tell you that right now. So, okay, anything else you want to wrap up in the market?
Yeah, I had a couple of things. Another little bit of a bright spot. Bullish sentiment came down from 49 to 45% this week.
It's a good direction. It's still a high number.
It is, but that doesn't usually happen when the market's going up either. So it was kind of surprising. Could just be a blip in the data or whatever. But
yeah, you know, it's kind of a trepidatious time in the country anyway with the election coming up so close.
Yeah, 3 weeks away or so. Yeah. And yeah, it's true. Speaking of the election, if you're a Trump fan, you may like what you're seeing in the stock market right now. Most of the top-performing sectors after the 2016 election are the same sectors that have been rallying since Trump overtook Kamala in the betting odds market. Also, the S&P 500 performance has correlated with his betting odds all year. So when he was beating, or pretty clearly beating Biden, the S&P was rising. When Kamala overtook him, the S&P was flat or slightly down. And now that he has regained the betting odds lead, the market's going up again. So
yeah, it looks like the honeymoon is over.
Yeah, it is a correlation. It doesn't mean that it's an actual, that's what's driving it, but they are correlated right now.
Yeah, you always got to be a little bit careful when you talk about cause and effect versus correlation.
Right.
There's a lot of things that are correlated
that don't actually have any connection.
Right, like the direction of the market and the migration of whales are very highly correlated. But anybody who wants to try to explain any cause and effect there, we're wide open.
Yeah.
That's it. All right. Oh, man, what a place to begin. I'm going to get into some tax things because this election is going to be really strongly influential in terms of the taxes that all of us pay. There are a lot of different concepts, and I think a lot of misinformation and quite a few just outright lies going on out there. And in this particular period of time, when you're doing some planning, it's kind of good that the election happens as early as it does, because if you're making moves based on what you assume the candidates will do, you're going to have lots of chance to implement one strategy or another based on the actual results. So we'll get into some more of that. But right now, after the show last week, we got an email from an alert listener that you guys are all, you've all heard. You probably don't know him personally, but you've all heard him. He comes on frequently. In fact, he just asked me to explain the parameters for the air show. Same guy. So he said he wanted to talk about some retirement things that go back into his personal experience, he being retired at this point. I'm going to read you some excerpts from the email so you know what his gist is. So he said, on today's radio show, you commented that $1 million is no longer sufficient for retirement. And I believe the way we put that.
Well, I was being more specific.
I'm getting into that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But it doesn't go as far as it used to.
No.
And that's the line that we use a lot because it's true.
Well, you look at the cost of a house 5 years ago and today.
I was involved in a couple of house sales back around 2000 that were over $1 million. And that was really rare.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very rare.
And especially in Jacksonville, and even in Jacksonville, it was just, it never happened except in like Ponte Vedra and a few other places.
And even Ponte Vedra, most of it was oceanfront.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, and I know 2000 wasn't all of a sudden to get to today.
No.
But $1 million houses now.
But it was like, from 2000 to like 2019, the growth was 3%, 6%, 3%, 2%. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it was like 2018 or something. Mm-hmm. It just exploded.
Yeah, we had to come back from the 2007, 2008, 2009 problem. That took quite a while to shake off because there were so many foreclosures and such. But anyway, then for the last few years, $1 million house is just like everywhere you look.
Yeah.
You see them in neighborhoods that you never would have thought it. Anyway, back to the email. It says, Jacksonville with Mayport and NAS Jax is home to a very large number of military and civil service personnel, which we all do know. And he said, I worked as a civil servant at NAS Jax up to retirement. it's important to tell everyone, but especially federal workers, how to calculate their needs for retirement, which seems like sort of a simple concept, but it's actually very astute. And here's the background that's going to give you why he was talking about this. I had an experience shortly before my retirement that's indicative of how serious the lack of understanding of their financial needs is for many as they approach retirement. Shortly before a federal worker reaches retirement, they're offered training about the retirement system. Now, think about that. This is a very significant concept. A significant part of that training was a calculation of what assets and retirement income each had and what they would need in retirement. There were at least 50 employees in the class. Their reaction to what they calculated was depressing. So many had never done this calculation. It was obvious they were not prepared to retire and would have to continue working. They did not have their $1 million set aside. It was very heartbreaking. My recommendation to the government was that the portion of the training be mandatory every 5 years from hiring until retirement, which I think is just an absolutely wonderful idea. I know some elements of what benefits people receive change over time, it's true, but the ability of a person to understand the pieces of retirement calculation picture and where they stand should not wait until they are ready to retire. If you folks could shed some light on that topic, it would be a huge service. So let's set the table here. The things he said in there, as I said, they can even come across sounding almost simplistic. But if you start wondering when you're 60, 64, 65, somewhere in there, can I retire? I'm probably going to tell you that chances are very, very strongly, no, you can't. Because what does it cost to live in retirement? Well, we've talked about this 10 years plus that we've been working together in this thing. We talk about it a lot. Most people think that they're going to go into retirement and their expenses are going to go way down. There is one thing that might be true there more than anything else. If you time it exactly, you might make your last mortgage payment on the day you retire or close to it. So yes, there will be an expenditure that you don't have to carry into retirement. That is not as common as you might think.
No, we see a lot of people taking mortgages into retirement, and it's not always a bad decision.
No, what if they're at 2.5% or 3%?
Right.
Anybody who would pay off a 3% mortgage has a psychological need to do it, much more so than a monetary need.
Yeah, in a 5% interest, 4.5% interest rate environment, that doesn't really make sense. Yeah,
let's make money every month by doing nothing.
Right.
That's good. Now, that is starting to come down. It's not coming down real fast, and it probably won't when you look at the strength of the economy.
Yeah, probably not.
The outlook for the Fed changes, I believe, has really diminished.
I agree.
Yes, it will happen.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about November?
I don't see a need for it right now, but that doesn't mean they won't do it.
We said that last time, too.
Exactly.
But they're going to do it.
Yeah.
Because they telegraphed it.
I really don't know.
I'm not real sure either, but it isn't going to be another half point.
No, definitely not. I think that's 100% off the table.
I do, too, unless there's something they're not telling us.
I mean, you're looking at a GDP now forecast of over 3%.
Yeah.
So that is not an environment where you need to cut another half point.
No, I think we ought to do full disclosure, too. We like it the way it is.
We do, but that I'm not really talking from my own personal like or dislike. I just don't see a need.
No, it makes advisors better able to do the job for their client by managing risk, by using the risk-free environment type interest rates. That's a whole nother discussion. Anyway, yeah, the need to learn early and take refresher courses and so on is not a strictly government nor military need. This applies to everybody who is working for a living and planning one day to stop doing that. You better be prepared. Unfortunately, over the past many years, our school districts and governments and so on have substituted teaching any kind of personal finance with things that we all know and joke about, like self-esteem and that kind of thing. Kids are very weak nowadays at financial planning and mathematics. Well, I'm always ready to compliment our governor in Florida, who has started what is becoming a national trend of reintroducing financial education into the school districts. And we will talk more about this when we just take another quick little break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Banwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banwee.
And I'm Adam Banwee.
And I remind everybody the lines are open, 904-222-8255. And our question today, we want to know how much higher, in percentage terms, the S&P 500 needs to go to reach the median bull market aged two or greater. It's already up, what did we say, 62 or something like that?
I have it here. Yeah, so it was like 64. Or something like that.
It's in the low mid 60s, I think. So how much further does it have to run just to reach the median? I also remind everybody that as soon as we sign off today, you might start getting some very loud noises overhead. Don't be surprised. It's always the case when the Blue Angels are in town. All right, we're talking about the need for retirement education and what Ron DeSantis has started that is mushrooming across the country, state by state, to reintroduce that kind of thing. And we get to the point where, quite literally, not pointing fingers at anybody or whatever, but kids would get out of high school and they didn't know how to balance a checkbook. Now, some people might argue, well, that's not really important when you don't have any money. But I argue it's probably more important when you don't have any money, because otherwise they're going to come after you. And we don't want that. Besides, until you understand how much you've got and you understand how much you're going to need, you're not going to get there. You won't do any planning to get there. So thank you to the governor for getting this back. Now, anybody who starts to learn about money, the first two things you're going to learn, the basic concepts of money. Rule number one, more money is better than less money. Rule number two, money sooner is better than money later. If you can't remember those two, you're probably not going to have a successful retirement. That's about the simplest concept ever. When it gets more intricate and when it gets into what we provide as a service for people, it's applying what's called the time value of money, which means that the second one, money sooner, has a great value because it has time then to grow and become greater and turn into a retirement cash flow for you. So when you start to understand the time value of money and that you have to start soon because it's a slow process, then you can actually start setting some actual goals. And the thing we do as certified financial planners, we always start with somebody and say, where are you now? So a lot of people don't know what their own assets are. So if you understand how to build a personal net worth statement, all your assets minus all your liabilities, that gives you a present position that you can start working from. Then you go up to, well, what do you need in retirement, or what do you think you're going to need in retirement? And then we go to work. That's the biggie. There are many milestones in people's minds about retirement, and the reason this whole thing came up was 1 million seems to be just kind of a magic number. Even though the value of that million might erode over time, there's something about that seventh digit that Americans are in love with. Unfortunately, throughout the past, most people consider that an unreachable goal.
Yeah.
Fortunately, it's becoming more reachable, and everybody knows it. And in fact, you're going to need it because, hey, I was just thinking back and put some things in my notes. Back in the late 50s when I was a young person, that was a long time ago, I used to take a quarter in my pocket and go downtown and see a movie and buy a Coke and some jujubes or whatever, and I got the quarter, you know, did the whole thing. Try that today with a $20 bill and you're probably going to be walking home. It's the average price of a movie now is $11.75. By the time you get popcorn and an Uber, you're going to have to pull out another bill to supplement your 20. That's a big difference from a quarter to a $20 bill. That kind of gives you a perspective on what it means to have enough money saved up to retire. So once you get that through your head that it's not going to get any better, then you start to go into the general rules for that. There's an old rule of thumb that says the 4% withdrawal rule. Adam and I talk about this a lot, too. A lot of people poo-poo it. We like it because over a lot of time, for a lot of people, it seems very, what's the word I'm looking for? Useful, doable. It works.
It does. Workable. It does. Even if you pay an advisor another 1% or so, you can still, you should return around over a long period of time with a reasonable portfolio around 6%. So if you only withdraw 4 plus 1, you should still grow your account over time. And I think that's the basic principle of why it works.
I've been doing this for 23 years professionally, and there's one thing that has been consistent throughout that 23 years, and that is when I ask people what their reasonable expectations are for their investments, they said, well, if I could bring home 5, 6, or 7% a year on average over time, I'd be real happy. So good, that's reasonable because it's doable. Yeah, once in a while you're going to get a little setback, sometimes more than a little setback, but the market taketh away once in a while, but it giveth a lot over time too. Mm-hmm. So if you have that realistic goal, you can do that. All right. Good morning, Ann. Question about pensions?
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Well,
thanks for calling.
I tried to listen to your show.
Thank you.
Every day. I have a few questions in regards to pensions. It's a private and qualify pension.
Okay.
So the first question is, if I withdraw it, like transfer over it to a traditional IRA,
mm-hmm.
would it be considered as income?
So you have the option to roll out a lump sum into a traditional IRA? Is that what they're offering you? Okay, that would not be a taxable event.
No.
Would it be still considered as income? That's my question.
No, not at that point. Once you remove it from the IRA, it becomes income, taxable to you.
Okay, so if I roll over to a Roth IRA, then it becomes income.
You can't do it to a Roth as a rollover. That would be a conversion. That means a 100% taxable.
Yeah.
And you don't want to do
that.
If you rolled it over to a traditional IRA, it would not be taxable. Right. If you converted it to a Roth, it would then be taxable.
Right.
You can do that by bits and pieces if you want to later on, but that's up to your cash flow needs.
Right. So I was just wondering if I withdraw it from the pension, if it would be considered as income. Like, let's say if I from a traditional. I know it would not be taxable, because it's in kind, qualified to qualify.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, there's no tax implication. Then if you want to turn it into your own personal pension, that goes back to what we were just talking about with the 4% rule. Whatever the gross amount is, you should be able to withdraw on average about 4% of your account balance over time and not run out of money. And in fact, maybe even grow your money a bit.
That is if it's invested appropriately, though.
Right. And then in regards to the amount, originally, when they had sent me the letter, it was dated in 2020.
Okay.
But then recently, like a couple of weeks ago, I had called and asked what the amount is, the lump sum, and the amount that I will be getting. And it was reduced. At least the lump sum was reduced, but the monthly payment remained the same. And I found that first, can they reduce the amount that I will be receiving since originally I got the letter, in front of me,
that have to do with?
But then I just found it odd that the lump, the monthly payment remained the same that from what he told me on the phone.
It is conceivable.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could have to do with interest rates potentially. I don't know. I'd have to see the paperwork to really answer that definitively, but that might be the cause there. So you have an annuitized; it's just sitting there in a lump sum, and you for 4 years you just haven't picked one option or the other option. Is there a deadline on picking an option?
Well, okay. This is the pension when I was working, and now I'm entitled to withdraw because I will be turning 65 soon. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to
figure out what your best option is.
Yes. So I wanted to know the procedure with how to withdraw and the amounts and
it has changed. The basics of it are if you're not interested in annuitizing and taking the monthly distribution from the pension, then and you want the lump sum, that your best bet is to roll it out into an IRA, a traditional IRA, and that will not be taxable, and then you can take the money out monthly if you need it, or you can leave it in there until the government makes you take it out at age 73.
Right. I mean, that's what I intended to withdraw it. I mean, to roll over it. But I was just wondering if there's a way to have them just the lump sum, the amount. That's what.
Yeah. I've only got 30 seconds. Can you, if I put you on hold, can you pick up after the short break? Thank you. There's a couple of questions that are pertinent right now and we want to get to.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, we're going to discuss that in a few minutes, but first we got to do what people like us do if we want to be on next week, pay some bills. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
I remind everybody the lines are open, 904-222-8255. And our trivia question remains out there. How much further, percentage-wise, should the S&P run in order to just meet the median of all over two-year-old bull markets? Now we're going back to Ann.
Thank you.
Thanks for holding.
Oh, of course.
A couple of questions. Yeah, you go. So, go ahead.
So I was just wondering about the amount being reduced, changed, and if that's something that can happen in a private pension, and if I could have them adjusted back to the higher pension.
It's a good question. So typically the pension is the amount that you're owed, whether in a monthly or in a lump sum, is based on an actuarial calculation that's done by the company that administers the pension. And so the answer is, I believe, yes, that it can change, but it's based on the rules of when the plan was designed, and the odds of them adjusting it back up for you are probably pretty low. I don't think that you can ask. I mean, you never get anything you don't ask for, but I don't.
Oh, I did.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So good for you for asking, but I don't think that they're going to change it for you, unfortunately.
Yeah, what shouldn't change is the monthly benefit amount.
And she said that did not.
Right. Now, here's what happens. When you have that monthly benefit amount inside the pension, they don't care what the value of your pension is anymore. The day you annuitize it, you can no longer take the cash out, that it's a series of payments for life. But their argument will be, you've got X amount of money, which will return you enough money at this interest rate to equal what the payout was on the pension, or to approximate it. So if they distributed you the money in times of 1% interest rates, it takes more money to make that kind of return. But if they distribute the money now that interest rates are higher than that, you can get a higher rate on it, so they don't have to give you as much money. But the one thing they can't do is change your payout.
Yeah. So unfortunately, I think that's what happened to you. Mm-hmm. And it's just the fact that we are at 4.5% interest rates versus 1% not that long ago.
A question. Have you multiplied your monthly payout by 12 and divided by the lump sum to see what percentage they're talking about paying you out if you amortize?
I did something like the monthly payment times, like, let's say 20 years, and to see the difference. But that's what I did. I didn't do it the way how you had mentioned about divided with 12 months, though.
Yeah, I'd just like to know what percentage payout annually that they are offering you, because that's the only way you can compare it to the results you could expect out of a rollover IRA.
Mm-hmm.
We also caution people, if you decide to take it out in cash, make sure it's a rollover IRA and that it isn't made out to your name and that you don't actually do the depositing. They make the check to whoever the custodian's going to be, and then there's no problem for the rest of ever with your current taxes.
Right, right. Okay. And can you tell me, I guess, the formula again to see the annual time?
Sure, just take the monthly payment times 12. That makes it an annual payment. And divide it by the lump sum that they're offering you, and that'll give you a percentage annual payout.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Good.
Okay.
If you want a really more thorough analysis, you'd have to include what are your other sources of lifetime income, what are your financial needs going to be, and do you have any debts and things like that. And that's the kind of thing that if you went to see somebody like us and had an initial consultation, we'd go through all of that with you and help you make a decision. That's kind of what we do.
Yeah, but I think it sounds like you're kind of leaning towards the IRA option. And so, yeah, the biggest things to watch there are just to make sure that you do everything step by step correctly so that you don't make that money taxable immediately to you. That's the biggest mistake that you can make. But as long as you do move the money into a rollover IRA that's already open and ready, waiting for the transfer, you should be okay.
One more question that might not seem relevant, but it actually is. Do you have children?
The older, like the adult now.
Do you have a will?
Yes.
Are they in it?
Yes.
Okay, you're still speaking. That's good.
Pardon?
You're still speaking to them. That's all good.
Oh yes.
Okay. My point here is if you choose the monthly payout, the pension payout, it'll probably be higher than 4%. But the day you die, it's over. Your kids get nothing.
Right.
If you do the IRA and you manage it well, plan it well, and take the money out monthly, when you're gone, they will inherit the IRA as direct beneficiaries. So there is a difference in your legacy, which way you choose this. And it shouldn't be the number one thing, but it should be one of the three or four things that are most considered on this.
Right.
And by the way, if you would like to come and talk to us, feel free. You can call us at 904-685-1505 or go to our website, Van Wee Financial, and set up an initial consultation, which we never charge for.
Okay. Thank you. Yes. Yes, I'll go on your website to get the contact number.
Good.
Great. Did we answer your questions?
Yes. Yes.
Excellent.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate your
show. Enjoy the weekend. Thank you.
Okay.
This is exactly why we're talking about the things that we're talking about
today. Yeah, that was such a relevant call.
It's an absolutely relevant call. I love it. So when you have determined what you're going to do, if you decide that you're going to have the lump sum, and I'm going back to Adam, I think about a month ago, you talked about Fidelity just updated their number of 401k millionaires.
Mm-hmm.
Only at Fidelity, there are 497,000 mm-hmm. 401k millionaires. That tells you that $1 million is not as hard to do as it used to be. Or as I put it in my notes, perceptions have not changed as much as reality. And it's okay because reality is the one that changed in your favor.
But that's actually not even, that's a little bit of a misleading stat too, because that's just 401k plans that are
exactly
active at Fidelity. Many people who have $1 million have retired and yep. they've already rolled those to IRAs. So, yep. So seeing that many just in active 401ks is pretty impressive.
Exactly. The purpose, the real point Fidelity was making was that people who participate in 401ks and do their annual, monthly, whatever contributions, those are the ones that are going to get there through so slow and steady investing. And Fidelity being Fidelity, they have some suggestions, and they make sense. Number one, invest early. Well, time value of money requires time. The later you start, the bigger the problem.
Just real quick, if you have 35 years and you want to save $1 million, you need to invest $740 per month if you get a 6% yearly return. And if you only have 5 years and want to do the same, you have to invest between $13,000 and $15,500 a month to make.
Hope you got a good job.
Yeah. So that is the difference in the time value of money.
Mm-hmm. Well, the second thing is invest as much as you can. Well, that's more money is better than less money. Back to rule number one, choose stocks over bonds. Now, this can be a little misleading. Stocks have the most volatility and the most return over time. You have to manage your risk profile somehow. Hardly anybody who isn't real young should be 100% in stocks. But there's where having an astute financial advisor can help you out a lot in guiding your portfolio along the way. Let time be on your side. Very simply, again, just that you let it ride. Don't do dumb things and you'll be good. And then they say retirement income sources, calculate your other ones. And that takes us back to something that I coined many, many years ago called equivalent net worth. Social Security is a classic example of that. If you're getting a $50,000 a year Social Security benefit, you have to multiply that by 25 to find out what the equivalent net worth is. In other words, what pool of money would it take for me to get $50,000 at the 4% withdrawal rate? So there's a lot going on here. Some of it's right in front of your eyes and some of it isn't. What needs to be done is the education. I don't meet many people who say that they learned enough when they were young that they're satisfied with it for the rest of their lives. That doesn't happen. The S&P is going to have to go up another 62.4% just to get to the median. And to get to the average, it's a lot more than that. So don't be discouraged, as Adam said earlier, if the third year, which is the one we're entering right now, sort of a fiscal year, don't be discouraged if that one isn't popping you big numbers like the last two. Statistically, historically, all those things, you can't prove anything till it's over, of course. But chances are, if you don't do dumb things, don't panic, don't jump out of the market, continue to invest everything you can as soon as you can and do it smart, chances are you're going to come out to be one of those very wealthy people. We love getting young people in and tell them, you know, you keep doing what we're all talking about right here in this office, you're going to wind up with more money than anybody you know. And you want to see a look on somebody's face when you tell them that. They get kind of wrapped up in it. Makes our day. All right, go enjoy the air show. Thanks for listening. Come back next week, same time. We'll be here. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.